Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line coming to you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi here on this Selection Sunday, also St. Patrick's Day as well. Michael, how are we doing today, man?
We're good. Happy St. Patty's Day to you. Did you celebrate yesterday? Drink all those green shots? I mean, were you behaving yourself? Are you good?
We behaved ourselves. We said, hey, this is an early wake-up call for us on the West Coast. So we were not out and about late. It was just more of an afternoon deal. Went out for a slice of pizza in the Arts District here in Vegas. I was back home, though, by like 5 o'clock because we had to dial in to watch the ACC Championship, had to watch the Pac-12 title game. So we were dialed in. We were on our best behavior. We were out and about, but best behavior as always.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Yeah, I thought Annie Agar today, just going through Twitter, and we'll touch on this later in the block, but she had a great, great line. She said it was smart for the Bears to trade Justin Fields on yesterday because everybody in Chicago was drunk from the parade, you know? And so, like, who can forget that parade? Ferris Bueller, you know, the movie The Fugitive, you know, Tommy Lee Jones chasing Harrison Ford, yeah, Harrison in the Ford, middle of the parade. Yeah, I mean, so that kind of was it was ironic, but we'll get on that. I mean, it's college basketball season. You got to be ready to go. I'm sure you got your brackets ready, all filled out. You're following Joe Lenardi on Bracketology. I mean, how great is that, that you can come up with a whole craft? Joe Lenardi was the sports information director. He still might be at St. Joe's. And he just created his own niche in terms of creating a name and a position. You give him credit. That's ingenuity at its finest, right?
He created a whole industry. Now there's bracketologists at every single network, every single publication. And now we have Bracket Matrix that compiles all of the bracketologists and gives you like an average about where everybody's at. So it's a whole like industry of trying to figure out who's going to make the tournament, who's on the bubble, who's going to just miss out. It's a fun time of year to do that stuff, which is Selection Sunday. The bracket will be released later on this evening, 6 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific time. Also, we have the VSiN Betting the Bracket show with our buddies Jonathan Von Tobel and Tim Murray. They'll be joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Tim joining us in 30 minutes. JVT will be joining us in hour number two at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, as we go through the bracket, get their thoughts on the NCAA tournament, what we've seen so far here through conference championships tournament. And we still have a couple of big boy conferences, the Big Ten, the SEC. They still got to figure out their conference tournament champions later on today, as well as some of the other conferences, the American Athletic, the A-10, and also the Ivy League, which I believe tips off in about like an hour or so, the Ivy League between 2 hours between Brown and Yale to see who will be the Ivy League representative in the NCAA tournament. And also, how could we forget, Wes Reynolds will be joining us in studio at 11:45 Eastern, 8:45 Pacific to give us his thoughts. Big Ten Wes, he follows the Big Ten closer than anybody that I know. So we'll get his thoughts on what's going to happen later on today between Illinois and Wisconsin, which has been a fun tournament out there in Minneapolis.
How about the run on North Carolina State? I mean, how about that? They lose the last. This is what makes the tournament so great. They lose the last four games of the regular season. They lose five of the last six. Right? They only beat Boston College at home, and then they turn around and knock off Louisville. No big deal. Louisville's looking for a coach. Syracuse, Duke, Virginia, and then they beat North Carolina to win the ACC. I mean, this is. Which is remarkable, right? Yeah. I mean, how do you just all of a sudden do that? And that's, remember 2 years ago when UCLA had to do the play-in and Burley got in and then they went to the finals? I mean, that's what makes this so fascinating. The ability to win one game, it doesn't mean you're the better team. It means you're the better team that day. And I think that's what makes this tournament so much fun. A best of seven series is harder than win one and in.
Yeah, best of seven, we typically see the better team win because you're playing out over the course of seven games or best of. In a one-off, man, anything can go. And that's what's, I think, it's like a working theory that I have of the regular season is one season, conference tournaments is one season, and the NCAA tournament is another season. So it's almost like college basketball has three seasons combined into one because we'll see these teams, you mentioned NC State, below 500 in conference play. 9-11 was their record in conference play. And then they win five games in five nights. I had NC State first half yesterday because I thought that they were going to run out of gas in the second half. Carolina likes to push the tempo. They're really good on the glass. I thought that they could wear them out once we got to the final 20 minutes just because of the five games in five nights. That's a tough ask for anybody. But credit NC State. I don't know how they found the energy, the adrenaline, the juice in the tank, but they looked like a team that was fresher than Carolina in the second half. And then how could you not love DJ Burns, their big guy in the middle? He's just like excellent touch. He's a big bruiser, but he's a fun player to watch, a great passer out of the post. I think he's going to be a star this upcoming week. For those who did not watch the ACC tournament, DJ Burns Jr., the big guy for North Carolina State, will be a household name by this time next week.
Where do you think he's an NBA player? I mean, he's only 6'9". Where does he play?
I don't think he's an NBA guy.
Yeah. That's what's fun about the tournament is because certain players just don't fit, but they can make a huge impact on their own team. So it'll be fun if they can keep this momentum going. It's remarkable. What a great season for them. And they're able to – I just was reading this morning that Kevin Keats – I think it's
– Yeah, Keats.
Kevin Keats is his name.
Yep.
Keats, he just got like a huge extension because of winning this tournament. He's on the bubble maybe to getting fired, and all of a sudden he comes in there and does it, which is remarkable. How about Dan Munson, fired from Long Beach State, told to get everything packed up and ready to go, and the next thing you know, he knocks off everybody, and he's now going to the tournament. He's a lame duck tournament coach. I think at Long Beach State might want to reconsider this firing.
I mean, they really. If you're the athletic director, how are you feeling after watching this conference tournament? So for those who don't know, Dan Munson was the head coach of Long Beach State.
Why wouldn't you just wait until the end of the tournament? Like, why wouldn't you just give yourself some time? Like, do you have to do it right away? Like, why not? Now, I know he was on a 5-game losing streak, but like, couldn't you just wait and see what happened and see how it goes?
It baffles my mind why the decision was made when it was, but they told him on Monday he would not be returning as the head coach. And all he does is goes ahead and leads his team to winning the Big West Conference tournament here in Henderson. And now they're going to the NCAA tournament. And after the game, he was talking to ESPN2, and his quote was, "When Jim Harbaugh says who's got it better than him, someone needs to tell him Dan Munson." How about that quote? It's a great quote.
I love it.
I don't know if you know Monson's story. He was the original coach that led Gonzaga on that first tournament run in 1999.
Right.
So the slipper still fits and all that stuff.
No.
And then he left for the Minnesota job. Then Mark Few took over in 2000 and has obviously been the coach ever since there. But yeah, Munson, I mean, he's been around for a long time. And I mean, it's a great run. And he says he still wants to coach regardless what happens after the NCAA tournament, that they're going to go dancing. He still wants to coach. He still has that fire and he still loves being around teams and being around the players. So kudos to him, man. It's a great lesson, I think, for a lot of folks out there.
Right. I mean, like, look, let's look at Dan Munson. He gets fired, right? And what does he do? He competes. He gets his team. He feels the obligation to the players that are working for him and playing for him to do the best that he can possibly do. Meanwhile, Kenny Pickett is deciding at the Pittsburgh Steelers that I have no interest in competition. Like, seriously, like, are you kidding me? Like, there's two different go in there and compete with Russell Wilson, Kenny. Show your merit. Now that Kenny Pickett story that was going around at the end of the year that he didn't want to be the backup, you know, where we all kind of dismissed it because we have a perception of Kenny Pickett that he might be this competitive guy. Now, is he really a competitive player? You know, is he really? So I think they're two different lenses to look at something. And I think when you have an opportunity to compete, you never know what's going to happen. Like, just keep going and keep trying to find ways to win the game. So look, credit to Munson. I really appreciate what he did.
Yeah. Prove him wrong. And that's what Dan Munson, he said, "You're going to fire me? Well, I'm about to take this team to the tournament. How about that? How about that one?" And you'll maybe they'll reconsider. Who knows? Also, this Temple story, I don't know if you've been following this one, Michael. This was gone back from nine days ago.
Well, I'm here in Philly. I mean, it's unbelievable, right?
It's insane. There was 9 days ago, we had the gambling allegations of like potential rumors of point shaving on this Temple team when the weird market betting with the game against UAB where they were 2-point dogs. It ends up closing 8 because everyone's betting UAB. They lose the game 100-72. So it's like, uh-oh, what's going on there? Well, since then, they have won 5 straight outright as an underdog, catching 14 last night against FAU, the same FAU that went to the Final Four last year. They knocked them off in the semifinals and now are one win away from going to the NCAA tournament amid a gambling investigation. Like, this is stuff that you can't even make up, honestly. Like, Hollywood would see this and say, "Get that out of here. Throw that script in the trash. That's not real life." But the Temple Owls now one win away from going to the NCAA tournament.
And if they win, they're 17-19. They're a sub-500 team that gets into the tournament. I mean, give them that. I mean, that's just remarkable. And it's kind of ironic that they play UAB, a team that, you know, that then that yeah. alleged, you know, where everybody's eyes were raised, and they, you know, they lost 100-72 in that game. So it'll be fascinating to see how this all plays out. And but credit to them. I mean, they found a way to bounce back and win four in a row. They've won five in a row, since the UAB conversation.
Yeah, they were catching 4.5 against UTSA. Then they were catching 2. Then they were catching 12 against SMU. Then they were catching 6 against Charlotte. And then last night, 14 against FAU. And they won all 5 of those games. And now they are against UAB, where they're catching 7 points in this contest in the American Championship game. We'll find out who goes to the NCAA tournament. I think it's a fascinating story if that team were to make the NCAA tournament.
That's what makes this time of the year so good. I mean, that's what makes it so good, because, you know, all these ratings and the Ken Pom and all that, you know, at that moment on that court on that day, you know, who shoots well, who does, the level of play rises, and all of a sudden, you know, Cinderella's slipper starts to fit. That's what makes it so appealing.
Oh, yeah. And bubbles will burst later on this afternoon. Unfortunately for those teams on the bubble, we'll get the bracket at 6 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock West Coast time. A lot of bid stealers this year in college hoops between the NC State, Oregon winning the final Pac-12 tournament last night here in Vegas, beating Colorado. So the Ducks are going dancing. Bad year to be on the bubble. We'll break it all down coming up in 20 minutes. But on the other side, Twitter and America's favorite backup quarterback, Justin Fields, been traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll discuss it next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to dominate the brackets. Turn your picks into profits this tournament with the upcoming VSiN Pro March Mania Betting Guide. Inside this guide, you'll find expert strategies, insider tips, and in-depth analysis that will give you the edge you need to outshine the competition. From underdog upsets to championship predictions, the VSiN Pro Betting Guide will have brackets from hosted experts, NCAA tournament betting trends, and of course, best bets from every round of the tournament. Don't miss out on this game-changing resource. Download the VSiN Pro March Mania Betting Guide on Tuesday at VSiN.com/betting guides. That's VSIN.com/betting guides. The mania is almost here. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. You have a team that you fancy, Michael, to cut down the nets? Are you going to go with the UConn Huskies? You know, we're going to see a repeat?
I root for my friend. I root for my friends, you know, and so I'm rooting for Texas A&M. They had a tough game yesterday. I thought they were going to beat Florida. I really do. Buzz gets his team to play well late in the year, and he had them going a little bit there, and they had a lead. They had a 10-point lead early in the game, and then they just couldn't close it out, which is ironic because they typically win with their defense, and their defense wasn't to the level it typically is. You know, they've been able to play good defense, and they get some scoring from Wade Taylor offensively. So, but I mean, according to Lenardi, they're the ninth seed in the league. So I'm excited. I'm hopeful that they can get in. Disappointed for Muss's team this year. He didn't get into the tournament. So I try to root for the friends that I have in the profession. And then, you know, there's always a team that catches your eye, right? There's always a team that kind of, like, you like the look, you like the feel, you like the connectivity. And so when you're watching these games, it's fun to see that as it all comes together.
Yeah, but right now, Lenardi has them as a 9 seed in his bracketology. His 1 seeds are UConn, the defending national champions, Purdue, Houston, and North Carolina, who lost last night to NC State in the ACC tournament championship game. Last 4 in, those bubble teams, it's getting a little sweaty. These teams thought that they were safe and in no matter what. Then all of a sudden, we saw all the bid stealers. Now they're dancing on the bubble. That's Colorado, TCU, Michigan State, and Oklahoma. And for the St. John's, the Virginias, the Seton Halls, the Indiana States, not a good NCAA tournament or champ week for them, because all those bid stealers likely left them on the outside looking in. We'll get into more college hoops coming up in about 15 minutes with our buddy Tim Murray. But let's discuss the trade that we saw yesterday in the National National Football League. Yeah. The Chicago Bears sending Justin Fields to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a 2025 sixth round pick that I guess has the condition, if Fields plays 51% of the snaps or more in 2024, to become a fourth round draft choice there. Your reaction to Fields? And I mean, you've been saying this, and the market lines up for what you've been saying, that, hey, there's nothing out there for him given the fact that he hasn't played well and also the contract that he's attached to.
Well, I was warned by my wife that to not say that I was right. So I'm not going to say that I was right about
Millie, he's got to take the lap.
No, she clearly said, you know, there's no patting on the back here. Just shut up and analyze the trade. So I'm going to do that. What they traded him for was essentially a seventh round pick. Think about that, Femi. So in this draft, if you want to get a seventh round pick, and you're looking around, you have to give up next year's six. A 25-6 is this year's seventh. Mm-hmm. So I want to be very clear here, this was not something that Ryan Poles did wrong. It wasn't. He tried to create a market. He put it out there that they might get a one. And the insiders tweeted that out, right? Everybody looked at it with a lot of skepticism. Everybody looked at it like, and then they put it out there that they want a three. And then they put it out there that they're not shopping them. I mean, they tried everything to package this into the positive light. And at the end of the day, there was no market. And so this is something that he had to do, because for all the conversation about we haven't decided on who we're going to draft, he clearly had made that decision long ago. And so, look, there's, as I've said all along, there is a huge, and I don't mean there is a huge gap between what the media thinks of Fields, what Bear fans think of Fields, and what people that do this for a living think of Fields. And you can't deny the 38 fumbles. You can't deny the 135 sacks. You can't deny the 30 interceptions. You can't deny that he has one passing game over 300 yards in his career. You can't deny that he's got 26 games of throwing for under 200 yards of his starts. Right. And so there's so much tape. And at the end of the day, the tape doesn't lie. The tape doesn't lie. Now, how you interpret the tape and you make excuses, which everybody has done for three seasons for Fields, is different. And if you understand the position of playing quarterback and throwing the football effectively, this is a problem. And so Pittsburgh gets him. Good deal for Pittsburgh. They paid nothing for him. Right. They paid nothing for him. And now they've told him, you're the backup to Wilson. And you're going to learn. Now, it's interesting. The Wilson offense and the Fields offense are going to have to be two different ones. Remember, Wilson doesn't run anymore, right? Yep. He don't want to run anymore. He don't want to work the pocket north and south. So it's going to be interesting how Arthur Smith kind of blends this together and see what happens. But I think for Justin Fields now, the pressure's off him, right? So he can sit back. He can kind of watch, learn, and get into an offense where he feels he can be comfortable. But let's be clear, that draft, and we're not sure Lawrence is a star either now. Let's not go there, right? Trevor Lawrence hasn't demonstrated that he's the, and I thought he was elite. I really did. I thought he was a generational talent. That has not been true. So, you know, Zach Wilson, they're going to have to cut Zach Wilson. Nobody's trading for Zach Wilson, okay? Let's put that out there for the Jets. And then you go through it all, Femi. I mean, it was a bottomless pit quarterback draft that year. And Ryan Pace in Atlanta has now had the distinction of trading up to get two quarterbacks that basically got sold for basically very little.
Yeah, that 21 draft class is almost kind of like a buyer's beware for this upcoming draft class here, where we're excited about all these quarterbacks. And hey, like, everything that's new is always exciting. But you mentioned that Trevor Lawrence had some struggles last year. Now, like, I think that we could see him potentially bounce back. But you're not wrong in what we saw this past season with Trevor Lawrence. Wilson's likely going to get cut. Lance was traded last year. He's the emergency quarterback, was never active for the Cowboys. Mac Jones is now with the Jaguars, and now Justin Fields is with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And these guys, this is before they ever got any sort of fifth-year option picked up or anything like that. Like, there was never even a doubt on that front. But I do want to ask you about Fields and the delta between the perception on the outside versus the perception inside the NFL and the league here, because, like, I was someone that was high on Justin Fields, and after seeing this past season, I've cooled off on that because how could you not, just based on the turnovers and just what we've seen in terms of the deficiencies here. I think that's where, as an evaluator for myself, and I think for other people as well, a weakness of mine is that I get tantalized by the physical attributes, like the arm strength, the athleticism, and all of that stuff. Do you think that Fields could eventually develop into something that is a productive quarterback? Or is this maybe just a lost cause of, okay, this guy is just going to be a backup and this is never going to be like a consistent starting level caliber QB in the NFL?
Yeah, I just don't see him as a legitimate thrower of the football. I mean, when he came out, his release, his ability to do the consistent things, right? You know, Brett Favre says great quarterbacks can throw the ball through the every quarterback can throw it through the door. Good ones hit the doorknob, and the great ones throw it to the keyhole. He was never going to be a keyhole thrower. And I think, to me, the inability to control the ball, the inability to really play in the passing game in the fourth quarter when he has to make the plays, and his inability to not turn the ball over has been a problem. And as the game moves at a rapid pace, it's very challenging. Now, I don't know how he's going to be as a backup, really. I think Justin Fields is the kind of guy that you want to give him as many. It's one of the things that I felt like with Trubisky. With Trubisky was a player that, if it went the way you practiced it, he could function in the game. But once the play broke down, then it became a problem. And I think, to me, that's what we're going to see with Fields as the backup. Is he going to be able to go on a sudden change into the game? Arthur Smith's going to have to change what he does. He's going to have to put a run game in and do some different things. So this one's going to be interesting. I think after 3 years, though, Femi, you either have it or you don't. Think about this. I thought the Eagles were the perfect place for him.
Yeah.
I really did. I thought play behind Hurts, you know, kind of similar offense that you can excel in. And the Eagles traded for Kenny Pickett over Fields. And look, the Eagles could have paid nothing for him. Look, we know that. There was no market. So, if the Eagles wanted Fields, it would have been easy to get him done. And they obviously chose to go in this direction, which has been the judgment of all the teams. And I think if you're Ryan Poles, the league told you what they thought of your quarterback. The league told you you have to draft a quarterback. The league told you you're not going to trade that pick because the league's value is the true value. What some guy in his basement in Des Moines thinks that there's 15 quarterbacks that aren't as good as Justin Fields that are starter, he's moronic. The league just told you what this all was.
So we're coming up against the break here. We got about 30 seconds left in the segment. There's so many layers with this thing, the Pickett stuff, how this affects Pittsburgh, the Chicago end of it, what they end up doing in the draft, their situation. But as we head to break here, over under 2.5 starts for Justin Fields in 2024.
Well, Wilson usually doesn't get hurt, though. He doesn't take too many hits. I would say I think the under is probably, look at Wilson. He is durable, yep. Right?
He is durable.
I can't imagine him missing much time. I really can't.
We'll discuss more of the Steelers QB situation later on in the show, but Tim Murray will join us next to break down some college hoops here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before the tournament tips off, start betting smarter with the VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today and get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code Lombardi. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do, the daily best bets, the betting splits, the betting systems, the analysis, the 24/7 video access, plus our March Mania betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember to use promo code Lombardi to get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. And joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, it's our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern Time. And also tonight, host of the Betting the Bracket Special from 7 to 10 Eastern Time with our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, who will be joining us in hour number 2. Tim, good morning. Happy Selection Sunday. I want to start off with kind of a macro question here because I think it's really interesting with these conference tournaments leading into Selection Sunday later on this evening. How do you sort of balance out between, all right, this team is ascending and playing really well and not trying to fall victim to the quote-unquote hot team heading into March Madness?
Yeah, it's such a great question. We're all going to try to figure it out when the bracket comes out. I mean, you know, in our backyard in New Mexico, a team that I've talked about on this program and then looked like a complete idiot when I brought up New Mexico because they started to play very poorly. And then they come here to Vegas, they win 4 in 4 days, and they look the part. And they're going to be, you know, they were a team, guys, that needed to beat Boise State to get into the field. Now, of course, they won the auto bid and they could be as high as an 8 or 9 seed come tonight. But then you look at some of the bigger boys. You know, what do we think of Purdue, Houston, who got absolutely smashed yesterday, Arizona, a lot of these teams that were fighting for the final one seed, North Carolina last night, Duke loses their first game. You know, it's a great question. You know, the stat that will be thrown around tonight, and it's a fact, I don't know if I'm going to necessarily handicap with it, but a team that lost their first game in a conference tournament, Arizona, Duke, they have never gone on to win a national championship. So look, you're gonna get a lot of information tonight, as we always do. You know, this seed has beaten this seed so many times, and it's always try in an inexact science to try to figure it out. But you know, we have seen teams, especially led by guard play. You look at UConn with Kemba Walker, Shabazz Napier, their two runs. Sometimes you can ride that hot hand. So we'll see if one of these teams that made this quote unquote magical run, NC State winning 5 games in 5 days in Washington, D.C., beating Duke, beating North Carolina last night as a double digit underdog. Do they keep it rolling and end up winning a game or two here in the NCAA tournament? But, you know, yesterday, guys, was madness. It's been a lot of fun. And to me, honestly, I think it's indicative of what is to come next week when we get the field of 68.
Let's say Temple wins today and beats UAB, yep, and North Carolina State's improbable. Like, that eliminates teams that should have gotten in, but they don't have the automatic bid. Who are those teams that you think could be potentially pay a price for some of these upsets that happened this weekend?
Yeah, it's called the old bid thieves, here on St. Patrick's Day. So the leprechauns out there stealing bids from different teams out there. And it's not just Temple, Michael. UAB is a bid thief. They weren't getting in with their resume. Now, they would be a better seed, or will be a better seed, if they do knock off Temple. But the the AAC is a bid thief because Florida Atlantic loses yesterday to Temple. And, you know, based off of the metrics, they should be in. I think Joe Lunardi had him headed to Dayton, which is kind of a fall a little bit from grace from where they had been heading into the American Athletic Conference tournament. But that's one that we know of. The Atlantic 10 is another one that we know of. Dayton is going to be in. They are an at-large team, but they have been knocked out in the A-10 tournament. So the winner of the A-10 tournament today, whether it be Duquesne or VCU, they are going to be a bid thief. Another bid thief, NC State. We know that they are already in. They won the automatic bid from the ACC. And then late last night at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Oregon knocks off Colorado. They are a bid thief. So you're looking at 4 bid thieves here in conference tournaments. And that's where, you know, you're on that bubble. That's where you start to feel a little bit uneasy. You know, last Sunday I came on the program with you guys and I said, hey, the Missouri Valley Conference Championship is going to be a hell of a game. It was. And what happens, unfortunately, Indiana State, they lose. And now they're more than likely going to be on the wrong side of the bubble. St. John's seemed to be getting hot at the right time after, you know, Rick Pitino called out his team. They played well against UConn at the Garden, covered the game. Couldn't get the victory. They're very much on the bubble in the cut line. Virginia as well. They get knocked out by NC State. Seton Hall lost their opening game to St. John's. You know, I'll tell you a team that unfortunately don't even watch Selection Sunday. South Florida. I mean, they had a remarkable year with Amir Abdul-Rahim in his first season as the head coach of the Bulls, and their metrics just aren't very good. They were the best team in the American Athletic Conference, but their non-con was not solid. They lost a couple bad games early on in the season. You got to remember, it's the full body of work that the committee looks at. So unfortunately for South Florida, a team who reached the top 25 and had a magical season, won the regular season in the American Athletic Conference, they're not going to make it. So, you know, you talk about these bid thieves. Those are just a handful of guys that are definitely going to be sweating it out. And, you know, even a team like Michigan State, who I thought was probably securely in the field heading into all of this madness, they're going to have to sweat it out a little bit. I think they'll be in, maybe headed to Dayton. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of teams because of how these conference tournaments played out, guys, that are going to be sweating it out here tonight. Another team that don't even watch, Wake Forest. You know, bad losses down the stretch, get knocked out early in the ACC tournament. Don't even turn on, you know, CBS tonight because you're not going to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, if you leave it up to chance, sometimes that can go ahead and happen to you here. We're hanging out with Tim Murray on the Progressive Guest Line, host of VSiN Primetime. Also, we'll be hosting the VSiN Betting the Bracket Show, 7 o'clock Eastern all the way to 10 o'clock with our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel later on this evening. Well, Tim, let's talk about some of the games today. The Big Ten title game, Wisconsin and Illinois. Badgers have been on quite the run. Illinois, impressive second half yesterday against Nebraska. Illini now laying 3.5, total 148. What do you like here in this game?
Yeah, we're seeing the market go up a little bit, right? They're back in the Illini. Both of these teams obviously playing quite well here, and we'll see, as you alluded to earlier, Femi, is one of these teams going to, you know, ride that hot hand? Wisconsin's kind of been a conundrum the majority of this Big 12 conference season, or Big 10, excuse me, conference season, because, you know, they were as high as, you know, sixth in the country per some of the metrics, and then they just started to pick up these losses. And I know, you know, when we talk about these games and how they're lined, it felt like Wisconsin was overvalued on a nightly basis. This is why they were. This is what they're capable of. And we saw yesterday, you know, not only covering against Purdue, but winning the game outright in overtime, a heck of a game there for the Badgers. So I'm going to take the points here with Wisconsin. You know, Terrence Shannon had an unbelievable performance yesterday with Illinois. But, you know, sometimes you look at these one-off games and that's where it gets so tricky. But I think Wisconsin, at the way that they're playing right now, A.J. Storr didn't even play all that well yesterday, didn't shoot it that well, shot, I think, 3 of 10 from three. So I think you get maybe a little positive bump there for the Badgers. But, you know, I'm not going to say you just blindly take points right now this time of year, especially in these conference tournaments, but I think these two teams, the way that Wisconsin's been playing lately, these two teams just played pretty recently, Illinois getting a victory there against Wisconsin by 8 in the closing weeks of the regular season. But I'm going to take Wisconsin here plus the 3.5 to keep this thing close. I expect a very competitive game in Minneapolis here this afternoon, and I think the Badgers have a chance to bring home some hardware after what felt like a disappointing stretch there down the final month or so of the regular season.
Quick, we got about a minute, Tim. How about the Florida, the Southeast Conference Championship, Florida-Auburn today? Who you like in this one?
Yeah, Michael, this isn't a game that I've played, but, you know, you know, Florida playing very well, shooting the ball extremely well. You know, probably the reason is I think the variance of Auburn allows me to like them a little bit more. I'll just run through a couple of the others, you know, real quickly. The Ivy League's going to get going here shortly, guys. Brown, this team was 6-17 just a couple weeks ago. They've now won, I think, 7 straight games. Huge upset yesterday over Princeton. So a fun one there in the Ivy League. I do think Yale and Jeff Jones gets the best of them. And then you mentioned it, Michael, Temple. How about this, you know, from a gambling perspective, the weird wackiness, the questions about the point spread going up, they get blown out. Since then, Temple has won every single game, has covered every single game. So we'll see if this this Temple team and the magic that is Temple, since they were put into question about possible point shaving allegations. Since then, guys, they have not lost a game. So a fun one to watch in the American Athletic Conference later on today with Temple and UAB.
Yeah, we'll have our eyes glued to everything that's going on with the 5 conference title games and also Selection Sunday with the brackets being revealed. He is Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime. We'll also be hosting Betting the Bracket later on tonight here on VSiN, 7 to 10 Eastern with our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel. Tim, thanks for joining us as always, and good luck with the bets today.
All right, see you guys.
Awesome stuff there. Thanks, from Tim Murray. All right, we'll good talk luck. Some more NFL on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now and use code TLL when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 that you wager now. This is a promo specifically for our VSiN viewers and listeners, made for you guys, and no better time to take advantage of it right now. TLL is the promo code over on DraftKings Sportsbook. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Thanks to Tim Murray, who joined us in the last segment, helping us break down college hoops selection Sunday. Tim will be hosting Betting the Bracket with Jonathan Von Tobel at 7 o'clock Eastern time. So right after the bracket breaks is released, they'll be breaking it down every single first round game. They'll be talking to odds makers. So you make sure you want to check that out to get instant analysis post bracket release. No better place to do it than here on the Sports Betting Network. So make sure you tune in later on this evening or afternoon if you're out there on the West Coast. But Mike, let's get back to the gridiron here and discuss the trade that we saw yesterday. Justin Fields going over to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, folks, of course, on Twitter that were high on Justin Fields are suggesting, hey, maybe this could be an open competition. Can he compete for the job with Russell Wilson throughout the course of the offseason? Well, Mike Tomlin said, scratch all of that. He has reassured Russell Wilson that he is the starter and was told Justin Fields that, hey, Russ is the starter. You're coming in to be the backup. Obviously, they want him to develop, but he's coming in to be the backup quarterback here. And I asked you as we were heading to break about 20 minutes ago, the over-under on the amount of starts that we could see for Justin Fields. And you brought up Russ's durability. But what about Russ's play on the field? Because last year, the Broncos wanted to bench him. They said, hey, get out of here. But that was more so the financials. Do you think that Russ is on a short leash given the contract is only 1 year with Pittsburgh, or are the Steelers all the way in on Russell Wilson being their starter in 2024?
I think the way Tomlin looks at Russell is he protects the football, right? What do you have, 8 interceptions last year, 7? You know, so he look, he went with the quarterback last year that he felt could protect the football. That's when he went to Pickett over Trubisky. Remember, you know, this is where ex-Bear quarterbacks go to die in Pittsburgh. So he went to, you know, Trubisky was turning the ball over in Pickett's rookie season, and then he went to Pickett. Pickett really wasn't making any plays, but he was protecting the football, though the Jet game cost him. But I think to me, that's where I think Mike says, look, if we can run the football effectively, play solid defense, don't lose the game with our offense, then I think we have a chance. And I think that fits who the Steelers are. I'm not saying they're going to be explosive or, you know, this is the right way, but I think ultimately Mike is sensitive to those turnovers, and Fields has a propensity to do that. What I found interesting in going through it this morning, getting ready for the show, I was reading an article that The Athletic wrote last month where they polled coaches and executives from all over the league, and they felt like Fields was going to bring back a second round pick. Like, whoever they polled in that, they probably shouldn't ask him anything again because, I mean, that was so off, right? And I don't even know who they polled. Like, if I were the writer that wrote that story, I'd say, okay, I'm never talking to those guys again because they're completely wrong. And so the reason that I bring that up, Femi, is because what you pay for a trade tells you what you believe the player will do for you. Well, they paid a sixth-round pick in 2025. You don't pay that for a starting quarterback. You pay that for a backup. Mac Jones, a sixth-round pick this year, backup, right? You know, we see what people have paid Desmond Ridder for Rondale Moore, backup, right? We see that how this happens, and I think that's clearly what the case is. So you can say all this, he's going to do this, this, and this. No, Fields is there to learn and try to get his career back on track.
Yeah, and like you said, the pressure is now off of him, so maybe this is a good landing spot for Justin Fields just to sit back and learn from a guy like Russell Wilson. Like, yeah, we've all seen the past couple of years, but Russ had days in the NFL where he was one of the premier guys, and maybe he can learn from Russell Wilson about what it takes to ultimately win at the position, because that's something that Fields has not done in his career 3 years in. Fields left Chicago, now the Bears, set with the number one overall pick, will be drafting a quarterback with that selection, and the betting market seems to think that this is all but done with Caleb Williams. After the trade, he has now moved out to minus 3,000 for the Chicago Bears to select him with that first overall pick. Does that match up with reality, this minus 3,000 price? Or is this maybe we don't really know who the Bears are going to select number one overall, and we're all kind of just projecting Caleb Williams to that spot?
Well, there's a lot to like about Caleb Williams, but there's also some of the problems with Caleb in terms of ball security that you see with Fields. I think he's fumbled 30 times in his collegiate career. You know, there's times where he plays smaller than his size. He's only 6'1", Femi. You know, he's got a really good arm. He's got better rhythm and better timing of the football. His feet and his arm are aligned much better than Fields was coming out of college. But he gets kind of – he loses his fundamental techniques and discipline within the framework of the offense. And on off-schedule plays, he takes some risks. So I think ultimately what the Bears have to decide, okay, we're going to draft Caleb Williams, and this is the best way for us to develop his skills within the system that fits his skill set the best. And, you know, his movement is good. He can make off-schedule plays when he gets out of the pocket. And, you know, he's got the ability to really make every throw on the field. But there's sometimes where he kind of does, he's loose with the ball, not two hands in the pocket, will make some mistakes. But those are things I think you believe you can correct with really good coaching. So I kind of believe this is going to be the case. I don't get the sense that, you know, do I think people like Nick's? Yes. A lot of people were at Nix's workout. Do people like McCarthy? Yes. Do people like Jaden Daniels? Yes. I think there's a lot of guys that they like. I think Williams is better when you line them all up than the other guys in terms of being able to come in and play and have the biggest upside.
I noticed you didn't mention Drake May when you were listing off the people that people might like. Is he not as well liked in NFL circles
as he is? I think people like Drake May. I think Drake May's a work in progress, right? I think Drake May's going to need some real fundamentals to kind of get him honed in to what he can do on a consistent basis. He needs to speed up his game a little bit. You know, I think to me, it's a little bit of you got to feel comfortable that you've got somebody that you can redshirt him. If he went to Minnesota, let's say, where they have Sam Darnold to play for the year and Kevin O'Connell can spend some time with him, I think that ultimately would be a really good development program for him. But, you know, the league moves so quickly, it's hard to do that. You got to have a specific – see, here's part of the problem why these quarterbacks tend to fail is if you don't have a specific plan for the quarterback where you're bringing him in and you're developing the skills within the system, you know exactly what you're getting, you're developing the skills within the system – then I think you kind of are searching and the fans are saying, well, he would be better in this system or he'd be better in that system. I think that's really the job of the head coach, the general manager, as the offensive coach, because the offensive coach could come and go, right? Mm-hmm. You got to have a system that's going to stay in place.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost similar to what we saw Jordan Love with the Green Bay Packers. He's developing in that system now. First year as a starter, toward the end of the year, everyone said, wow, the Packers found their guy because they were able to kind of, you know, nurture Jordan Love and bring him along there and let him learn behind Aaron Rodgers. The Caleb Williams Pro Day is March 20th there. I'm sure a lot of people will be out there in Los Angeles for the Pro Day. The Chicago Bears, of course, I'm sure will send a big contingency out there to meet with Caleb Williams here. Is this the like most ideal setup for a rookie quarterback to enter into? Because the Bears have made quite a bit of moves. They went ahead and made the trade for Keenan Allen. So now you have Keenan Allen. You got DJ Moore. You got Kmet. They signed DeAndre Swift. They made improvements to the offensive line as well. This feels like it's a pretty ideal setup for a quarterback to come in and at least have some success early on.
Well, he's going to have to because Eberflus is really kind of coaching for his job next year, right?
Yeah.
All these coaches are coaching for their job, and it's always challenging to be coaching for your job when you're playing a rookie quarterback. Now, look, C.J. Stroud came through and did that, but if just ask Frank Wright how that goes, right? Just ask Frank Wright how that might go.
It was an 8-game
season. He didn't make it through the season. Yeah, he didn't make it through the season. So it's challenging, I think, to me. You know, the Bears have kind of, they've done a lot of work in terms of trying to improve their roster. You know, they've added Keenan Allen, who gives them an, you know, Keenan Allen is kind of like Hopkins in the sense that he's never going to separate from anybody. He's never going to outrun anybody, but he catches the ball really well. And he's, you know, he's a jump ball receiver that he comes down with it. He converts third downs, which is critical, right? So, you know, they've added Gerard Everett, a tight end. I mean, they've made some improvements. DeAndre Swift, to me, is the key guy in what they've signed. They signed him right out of the bat. You know, is he better than David Montgomery, who they let walk away? We'll see. The problem with Swift for me is I like him a lot, but the problem is two teams have gotten rid of him after they spent time with him. So, but this is a year where I think the Bears have to show really good improvement, because if they don't, then Eberflus is sitting there saying, well, what about me? You know, what do I do?
Yeah, and Ryan Poles might be saying the same thing as well. To be honest, like those guys, when they have to make the announcement that you're coming back for 2024, that's never a good sign heading into that season. You know, the seat's a little bit warm out there in Chicago, but maybe the Bears, with what they've done this offseason, could go ahead and make the playoffs in 2024 with a rookie quarterback. All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two, we'll reset the deck here with some of the NFL news and notes from around the league.